I'm Elsa Levasseur, and I'm a sustaining member, and I give monthly on the internet. It's so easy to listen to WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And yesterday, May 18th, was the 40th anniversary of the bottle bill. So there are far less bottles on the side of the road anymore. But some activists want lawmakers to increase the deposit to 10 cents and expand it to include other containers such as wine, liquor, and non-carbonated beverages. Ryan Carson from the New York Public Interest Research Group, Judith Enck of Beyond Plastics, and others were at the Capitol on May 18th to ask lawmakers to make the change. We'll hear this report this hour. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. On the WGXC Morning Show, it all starts after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On June 17th, three bands come to Tubby's in Kingston. First E, the trio of Jason Sidney Sanford, Thada Zedek, and Gavin McCarthy play rock music. A Live Skull, the renowned 1980s post-punk experimental rock band, is back together and are playing on this show with Upper Wilds, who record for Thrill Jockey and feature multi-instrumentalist songwriter Dan Friel, who's best known for his work in the band Parts and Labor. E, Live Skull, and Upper Wilds play at Tubby's in Kingston June 17th, and you can find out more about this show and many others on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Henning's Local Test Kitchen in Round Top, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Voters in all 12 school districts in Greene and Columbia counties on May 17th overwhelmingly approved the district's proposed 2022-2023 spending plans and ballot propositions. Perry Teasdale reports in the Columbia paper that the margin of victory in the New Lebanon district was so large for the budget and a bus purchase proposition that, in a brief website letter to the community, school superintendent Andrew Court referred to the victories as 80% and 70% respectively. The budget for Ichabod Crane received strong support, winning approval with 1,155 yes votes compared to 597 voting no. The proposition to purchase four school buses for $444,000 was green-lighted by voters with a margin almost as large as the budget vote tally. in Hudson, the $54 million budget was easily approved, and in the Board of Education election, incumbents Willett Jones, Lakia Walker, and Mark DePace were reelected to three-year terms. Kirsten Gustafson received the fourth highest number of votes and will be awarded one of the partial terms ending in June 2023. The fifth open seat with a partial term ending in June 2023 was won by Calvin Lewis, a write-in candidate. In Greene County, the story was similar. Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that budgets in Catskill, Coxsackie, Athens, Cara-Durham, Hunter Tannersville, and Windham-Ashland-Jewett districts were all approved by wide margins. Catskill Central School District Superintendent Ronell Cook wrote in an email on May 18th, quote, "We thank our taxpayers for their support with helping us to maintain our current level of staffing while providing students with the highest quality of academics and extracurricular programs. I'm extremely happy for our students, staff, and the community," unquote. Voters in the Greenville District approved the proposed budget as well as a $1.1 million proposition to purchase 10 new vehicles. The Cara-Durham Board election incumbent Todd Hilgendorf was reelected to a three-year term, with James H. McManus III and Cheryl Moore also earning seats on the board. All local districts kept their tax levy increases at or below the state-mandated cap.
Democrat Josh Riley switched where he is running for Congress on May 15th, just after the district maps were announced. Syracuse.com reports Riley, born and raised in Endicott, just west of Binghamton, was now to run in the 22nd district, but the lines shifted May 15th when the court-appointed special master released new maps for the state's congressional district. Instead, Riley is going to run in the 19th district, which next year will stretch from Columbia and Greene counties west through Binghamton and Ithaca to Tompkins County. Riley says he has experience as Representative Maurice Hinchey's staff assistant and worked on unemployment insurance at the United States Department of Labor before going to law school. He has also been a law clerk for Judge Kim Wardlaw on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit in California and as general counsel to U.S. Senator Al Franken on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Riley, though, will have one of the oddest election seasons ever. Delgado is expected to resign soon as Governor Kathy Hochul recently picked him to be her lieutenant. Depending on when Delgado resigns, there will be a special election on June 23rd or thereabouts for the seat in the old district between Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, a Democrat, and Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, a Republican. Riley could be in a primary election for the new district seat on the same day. Then Ryan will run for the 18th congressional district seat in November. And if Riley makes it to the general election, he will face a Republican, most likely Molinaro, who could be an incumbent by then.
Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that Stephen Baker, owner of Moore's Homes in Prattsville, pleaded guilty this month in Prattsville Town Court to one count of offering a false instrument for filing a misdemeanor. As part of the plea deal, federal fraud charges were withdrawn, said Greene County District Attorney Joseph Stanzione. In November 2019, Baker and former Prattsville Town Supervisor Corey O'Hara were indicted in federal court for conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and theft. O'Hara was also charged with bank fraud and making false statements in a loan application. In March, Baker agreed to plead guilty to a state misdemeanor, and the U.S. Attorney's Office agreed to then dismiss the federal charges, thereby satisfying the federal government's case against Baker. Quote, "He was sentenced to pay a fine and was granted a conditional discharge, a condition being that he engage in no further criminal activity," unquote, Stanzione said. In August 2011, Hurricane Irene tore through northeastern New York. O'Hara was serving as the town supervisor at the time in Prattsville, and the town secured millions of dollars in federal rehabilitation funds. It was alleged that O'Hara and Baker used phony invoices from Baker's modular home business to bill for work on O'Hara's service station that was never done. According to authorities, O'Hara and Baker engaged in the fraud from 2013 through 2015. Both men were accused of profiting from the fraud by collecting funds through the New York State Main Street Program, the local waterfront revitalization program, and applying for a business loan with NBT Bank. As part of the plea agreement reached in March, O'Hara is expected to plead guilty to one count of the federal indictment, but exactly which charge O'Hara will plead to has not been disclosed. Also in March, senior U.S. District Judge Frederick J. Scullin agreed to a 90-day continuance for the parties to finalize the agreement. Read more about the story at porcupinesoup.com.
Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman on the new state Senate district lines released this week by the court-appointed special master. The new maps have some incumbents moved out of their districts and has other candidates switching their previously announced plans. State Senator Michelle Hinchey, for instance, currently represents the 46th district, but Hinchey is based in Socrates, and the 46th district under the new map is now moved to Albany County and other areas farther north. So instead, Hinchey has announced she will compete for the 41st district, which under the new maps covers all of Ulster and Columbia counties and the northern half of Dutchess County. Currently, Republican Sue Serino of Hyde Park represents that district, and Jamie Cheney, a Democrat from Rhinebeck, was set to oppose her. Now Hinchey and Cheney face each other in the August primary election before the general election in November. Republican Rich Amador was running against Hinchey in the 46th district. Republican Daphne Jordan currently represents the 43rd district, which will now represent all of Rensselaer County, a tiny portion of northeast Albany County, and southern Washington County. Greene County will get a new representative, switching from the 46th district to the 51st district. Republican Peter Oberacker from Schneinevus is the incumbent there, with a new district similar to the new 19th congressional district stretching west to Binghamton. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that state lawmakers are pushing for the merger of the Office of Addiction Services and Supports and the Office of Mental Health, with the intention of better serving those facing both addiction and mental health crises. The state Senate on May 17th approved a bill that would merge both offices, creating the new Office of Addiction and Mental Health Services. Quote, not a week goes by that I don't get a call from a family who has lost a loved one who said their family member was in and out of treatment 6, 7, 8, 9 times, but because they never treated their underlying mental health disorder, they kept self-medicating until fentanyl caught up to them, unquote, said State Senator Peter Harkham. He said the measure will break down existing barriers in treatment programs and follow the federal government's recommendation for integrated care. 70% of people who have a substance abuse disorder also have an underlying mental health disorder. That overlap rises to 90% when a person is in crisis. Half of those living with a mental illness also have an underlying substance abuse disorder. Harkham also wants to create a 7-person standing advisory committee on addiction and mental health programs for the purpose of crafting policy for prevention, care, and treatment for people facing mental illness and addiction, as well as a comprehensive plan for implementation. There has been a record rise in overdose deaths statewide over the last 2 years, coinciding with the COVID pandemic. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Natasha Von Holrich is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Columbia County resident Emily Nooners tore down 2 White Lives Matter banners over Interstate 90 on May 14th. The banners read, and I quote, stop white replacement, and I quote, wake up white New Yorkers, end quote. The Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center both call the White Lives Matter group racist. Nooners said, and I quote, I'm driving down the highway and I just see these banners up and I immediately felt sick. I almost didn't believe that that was what I had seen because from a distance it was quite small. I just notated where I thought it was, being familiar with the area. Then I saw a second one and I was like, oh yeah, we're going to get those. I could just not fathom the idea that some people would have to drive under them, end quote. One of the banners was on the overpass in Chatham and the other on the overpass near exit B1. Nooner said, and I quote, I had no idea that at the very time that I had been compulsed to cut these down, the shooting was happening in Buffalo. I returned to my house around 2:40 p.m., which means I was pulling those banners down just before and during, which I didn't find out until later in the evening, end quote. 10 people were killed and several others wounded by a gunman in Buffalo who posted an online screed with the same conspiracy theory about white replacement mentioned in one of the banners. Nooner said, and I quote, "I have a really sick feeling." The shooting happened in Buffalo. These signs were posted along 90, and 90 is the route that leads to Buffalo. Some people kind of thought that it might have been a trail. It's just uncomfortable to think about the proximity. It's so close to our community, it's disturbing. End quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Thursday, showers mainly after 11 a.m. with the temperature high near 67 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy with the temperature low of around 51 degrees. And on Friday, patchy fog before 7 a.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly sunny with the temperature high near 82 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with the temperature low of around 64. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
On Thursday, May 19th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC, 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m., Cheryl Kay from Columbia County speaks with Thaddeus Tukes, Isaiah Spencer, and Jeremiah Collier, 2022 Artist Corps selected by the Hyde Park Jazz Festival. She'll also interview guitarist Yuval Amani about his new album and hear new music from Manel Fortia and the San Gabriel 7 on Situation Fluxus at 10 a.m. on the radio at WGXC. At 11 a.m., hear music from Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma. At noon, Alan Skerritt takes over with 2 hours of Crossroads in Rhythm after the local news. Then there are primary concerns at 2 p.m. on What's the Frequency, Kenneth. The Replacements take over turn on the news at 3 p.m. At 4 p.m., we're live from Hudson with Sehal Graham and Tom DiPietro hosting the WGXC afternoon show. Then at 9 p.m., we're live from Toronto with Andrew O'Connor and his Disco 3000 show. At 10 p.m., we're live from Columbia County with the Boogie Woogie Flu from Ted Barron on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On June 17th, three bands come to Tubby's in Kingston. First E, the trio of Jason Sidney Sanford, Thalia Zedek, and Gavin McCarthy play rock music. Alive Skull, the renowned 1980s post-punk experimental rock band, is back together and are playing on this show with Upper Wilds, who record for Thrill Jockey and feature multi-instrumentalist songwriter Dan Friel, who's best known for his work in the band Parts and Labor. E, Live Skull, and Upper Wilds play at Tubby's in Kingston June 17th, and you can find out more about this show and many others on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Podcasts get made locally at WGXC.org, as all WGXC's locally produced programs can be subscribed to and found in all the usual podcasting places. Tune in for a mind-expanding radio from local news to a travelogue of sounds, either live at 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, May 19th. Early morning temperatures range from 46 degrees in Smith Corner to 52 in Red Hook. Soil temperature is above 60 on the mountain and above 65 down in the valley. Rain chances will be around all day today and decrease greatly after 10 a.m. A high of 66 happens at 6 p.m. Overnight, skies clear up and temperatures drop to 50 degrees. Tomorrow we'll have a high of 81 happening at 3 p.m. and the afternoon will have gusty winds and a tiny chance for thunderstorms. 61 overnight takes us into a dry and hot Saturday with a high of 94. Most of the night will be in the 70s before bottoming out at 68 degrees. Then Sunday, hot again and stormy with a high of 92. Pollen levels for today will be medium and high tomorrow. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:08 a.m., then high tide at 5:57 a.m., low tide again at 12:59 p.m., then high tide once again at 6:46 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 67. Sunset today will be at 7:57 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:27 a.m. Looking way up, we see a 15% chance of X-class flares today. GPS and other radios could be glitchy. Solar wind speed is currently 454 kilometers per second at 2.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 147. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Friday Night Racer of Hartsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I am Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
Come listen to Catskill Cabin Getaway on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
That's the third Thursday each month.
Or you can listen to our podcasts. Just go to WGXC/something.
It's Catskill Cabin Getaway, I guess. I don't know. Let's check it out.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
That was Ob Nox with Names, 2020 new music on the radio at WGXC from the album Templo del Sonido with Ob Nox or Lamont Bim Thomas on drums.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
At some point, we're going to run out of the treatments we have. And without additional resources, we will find ourselves in the fall or winter with people getting infected and no treatments available for them because we will have run out.
White House COVID-19 response coordinator Dr. Ashish Jha urged Congress to allocate new funding to fight the pandemic. Cases nationwide are ticking steadily upward for the first time since the Omicron surge peaked in mid-January. Just days after a mass shooting in Buffalo left 10 dead and 3 injured, the House of Representatives Wednesday passed a new Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act. In a news conference, Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, said the bill aims to bolster America's response to the growing threat of white supremacy.
Crucially, it would provide training and resources to assist state, local, and tribal law enforcement in addressing these threats.
Durbin says it would also combat alleged white supremacist infiltration of the uniformed services and federal law enforcement. The measure still needs to clear the Senate, where Majority Leader Chuck Schumer plans to push for a vote in the next week. President Joe Biden will meet with the leaders of Finland and Sweden to discuss the two countries' application to join NATO. CNN reports Turkey has raised an issue with the nation's bids, arguing they're sheltering members of the Kurdistan's Workers' Party, which has been labeled a terrorist organization by Turkey, the U.S., and the European Union. New applicants to NATO need unanimous approval, including Turkey's. But National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told reporters Wednesday the administration is confident it can assuage the country's concerns.
Finland and Sweden are working directly with Turkey to do this, but we're also talking to the Turks to try to help facilitate.
The Kansas Supreme Court has upheld a Republican-drawn congressional redistricting plan, which Politico reports may edge out the state's only Democratic representative. The voting rights group and residents who brought the suit argued the new map violated the state's constitution and that it reduced the voting power of Black and Latino residents. The House Judiciary Committee held a hearing Wednesday on abortion access. Dr. Yashika Robinson, medical director of Alabama Women's Center, one of the state's last clinics providing abortion care, told lawmakers her clinic often cares for out-of-state patients.
Because of medically unnecessary abortion restrictions, I see patients forced to travel up to 12 hours from as far away as Louisiana, Florida, and now Texas because of the ripple effect of abortion bans, stigma, and targeted harassment, all leading to other providers being forced to shut their doors.
The hearing comes as the U.S. Supreme Court is likely to overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark case guaranteeing the right to an abortion, in the coming months. Abortion is still legal across the country until the Supreme Court hands down a final decision. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Jonah Chester. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe with Wave Farm and their daily radio news. Anyone who needs to know what time it is and does not have a clock or a watch or any sort of computer can still find out. The U.S. Naval Observatory still maintains a phone number, 202-762-1401, where anyone can call and hear the exact time. The Navy has several other time numbers, just for modems. And Jock Elliott reports in the SW Elling blog that there are several shortwave radio stations also set up with only the time of day repeating endlessly as content. Quote, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, part of the U.S. Department of Commerce, maintains a couple of stations devoted to broadcasting time announcements, standard time intervals, standard frequencies, UT1 time corrections, a BCD time code, and geophysical alerts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, unquote, Elliott writes. WWV in Fort Collins, Colorado is one station, radiating 10,000 watts on 5 megahertz, 10 megahertz, and 15 megahertz, 2,500 watts on 2.5 megahertz and 20 megahertz. WWVH, based in Kakaka, Hawaii, transmits 10,000 watts on 10 megahertz and 15 megahertz and 5,000 watts on 2.5 megahertz. Quote, WWV uses a male voice, WWVH a female voice. They are staggered in time so they don't talk over each other. While doing research for this blog one afternoon on 5 megahertz and 10 megahertz, I could hear the female voice followed by the male voice, so I was hearing both Hawaii and Colorado, unquote, Elliott writes. There's also a Canadian time station, CHU, transmitting 3,000 watts on 3.33 and 14.67 megahertz, and a 5,000 watts on 7.85 megahertz in English and French from Barrhaven, Ontario. And there's also a time station beaming from Moscow, Russia, that transmits on 9996 and 14996 kilohertz. Read more about this story at the S.W. Elling Post, and go to wavefarm.org for more radio news.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On the 40th anniversary of New York's bottle bill, environmental advocates and lawmakers gathered outside the state capitol on May 18th to celebrate with the birthday cake, and called on state lawmakers to pass an improved and expanded bottle bill. We hear first from Ryan Carson of NYPIRG, who coordinates the Bottle Bill Coalition. We then hear from the lead legislative sponsors, Assemblymember Steve Englebright and Senator Rachel May. We finish with Judith Enck, who led the fight to pass the initial bottle bill and is now head of Beyond Plastics, and Martin Narrow, president of the Empire State Redemption Association.
Today, we are here to have a 40th birthday party for the bottle bill. So, you know, a lot of people say, you know, turning 40 may be over the hill, but really, really, we are actually just getting started here with the bottle bill. But one thing that we are over is landfills, and that is what this bill is all about, and we're going to be increasing New York's recycling rate. So, 40 years of this bill, it has been unbelievably impactful. This is the premier piece of recycling legislation in New York State. It has reduced roadside litter by 70%. It has doubled New York's recycling rate, and it has drastically, drastically improved the lives of some of New York's most underserved communities. So when we're talking about the bottle bill, we're talking about a major, major expansion that is going to be taking effect very, very soon, and we only have 15 days to get this bill done. So when we're talking about the bottle bill expansion, we're really talking about two key things. The first thing with the bottle bill expansion is we need to add more containers into the bottle bill. Right now, it doesn't really make very much sense how we actually categorize what is covered and what is not. For example, so right here, I have a bottle of Coca-Cola. We're all very familiar with this. This is carbonated, so it's covered by the bottle bill. It's a soda. So this has a 5-cent deposit on it, manufactured by the same company, like a Pure Leaf Tea. This is not covered by the bottle bill. Why is it not covered by the bottle bill, you might ask? It's made out of PET plastic, it's just as recyclable. You know, it would make a lot of sense if both of these things, made by the same company, made from the same material, were to be recycled under the bottle bill. However, because this is uncarbonated, it is not covered by the bottle bill. So When we have a more effective bottle bill that includes all types of plastics for all types of beverages, we're going to be able to recycle more plastic. We're going to be able to have a much higher redemption rate. Here in New York, we've really leveled off in bottle redemption rates in New York State. Right now, we are sitting at 64% bottle return rate, whereas states that have a higher deposit rate, that have a 10-cent deposit rate, sit in the low 80s and high 90s, states like Oregon and Michigan. So the other key part of the bottle bill expansion is moving the deposit from 5 cents to 10 cents. Now, this is great for the consumer as well. Right now in New York State, municipal recycling is really struggling with the amount of plastic and glass that they have to handle every single day. Now, we need to divert more and more of that away to redemption centers. Now, we're going to get to hear from the Empire State Redemption Center Association in a couple of minutes that can talk about why it is so important that these go to redemption centers where they're much, much more likely to be recycled. But for the key issues for this bottle bill expansion, we are talking about expanding to types of glass that are not covered right now, which is liquor bottles, wine bottles, and hard cider bottles, and then the rest of plastics like this that need to be recycled and will be recycled in greater numbers because of this bill. Assemblymember Englebright, who is the key sponsor in the assembly.
At 40, it's time look and see if we can improve what is clearly the most effective recycling program in the state's history. If we can do better, we should. And I believe that increasing the incentive for returning bottles and expanding the universe of bottles that are covered by the law is altogether appropriate.
I would like to call up our Senate sponsor, Senator May.
40 is a great age for a makeover. And here we go. So before I held elective office, I served on the board of the Onondaga County Resource Recovery Agency, which is one of the premier waste management agencies in the country, especially when it comes to their recycling and composting programs. And I was on the board as the recycling business went from something that was self-sustaining to something that was definitely not, where that you just couldn't find markets for recyclables, and municipalities and taxpayers were paying more and more and more to make recycling work. The bottle bill is a way both to increase recycling in returnables, but also to infuse that whole system with more funding. So it is a win for the environment, it is a win for municipalities and taxpayers, it is a win for consumers just across the board. One of the first bills I sponsored was to include cider bottles in the bottle bill because, you know, there's a lot of things we drink now that we didn't drink 40 years ago, but I think this bottle bill is going to make things much more clear and understandable. One of the biggest barriers to recycling and smart waste management is confusion. If you're just confusing the consumer, they're not going to participate. So this makes it simple, easy, and smart and sensible. And so I am very proud to sponsor the bill in the Senate and look forward to getting it through our the whole system and onto the governor's desk as soon as possible. Thank you.
So next up, I want to bring up Judith Enck, who is the president of Beyond Plastics, which is fighting to end our reliance on single-use plastics.
And thank you, Governor Kerry, wherever you are. It was his most, I think, significant environmental accomplishment. Billions of containers have been recycled. We have much less roadside litter. When we first passed the bill, we thought the nickel deposit would be used for kids who wanted to supplement their allowances. Little did we know that picking up bottles and cans would be a major source of income for so many of our brothers and sisters in the state who are struggling economically. And thankfully, the redemption centers who are here today make it easier for people. There are 10,000 people in New York City collecting bottles and cans at no cost to taxpayers. So we were able to add bottled water during David Patterson's administration. Thank you, former Governor Patterson and his stellar staff. And now we need to take the next step and expand as Ryan described. I know there's just a few weeks left to the legislative session, but who could possibly be opposed to this?
So next up, I want to call up Martin Narrow from the Empire State Redemption Association, who will talk about the critical role that redemption centers play in the recycling process here in New York State.
And I have a dream that we will live in a more sustainable future, that we will help the circular economy thrive. I'm here today representing the Empire State Redemption Association, which has over 126 members across New York State. I am the proud founder and president of EVTEC, which is a recycling technology company. It's that the science is clear that container return systems are the most effective recycling systems across the world, especially here in the United States. It is no secret that the U.S. struggles with a terrible 5% recycling rate when it comes to municipal and curbside recycling. However, container return systems boasted last year in New York State a 64% return rate for bottles and cans. And it is a fact that 85% of all recycled material that goes into packaging comes from redemption systems. As humankind stares an all-time high plastic crisis in the face, I applaud our senators, assembly members, and government representatives for supporting such a fine piece of legislation that will truly help us lead a more sustainable life. I also must give thanks to many of the unnoticed redemption centers, which are truly the backbone of the recycling industry here across New York State. Redemption centers buy thousands of containers at a time, are perhaps the most convenient way to return bottles and cans, allowing you to return thousands within a given minute.
This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Tuesday, May 17th, there were school board elections and school budget elections throughout the region, throughout the state. And Porcupine Soup runs down the results in Greene County and Southern Albany County. Kara Durham, the school budget passed 344 to 163. Voters also approved a bus purchase 371 to 133, a capital reserve fund 349 to 151, and the Caro Public Library increased appropriation 355 to 151. In the Board of Education election, incumbent Todd Hildendorf was reelected with 314 votes. Also elected were James H. McManus III with 216 votes and Cheryl Moore with 212 votes. Those were three-year terms. The losing candidates were Dermot Gavin with 202, Dale Handel with 189, and Tanya Warner Fricky with 184. In Catskill, the school budget passed. Voters also approved a Catskill Public Library proposition, 464 to 215, and bus purchases, 415 to 255. Incumbent Board of Education member Patricia Duchon was the leading vote-getter with 477 votes, and newcomers Leonora I. Fries with 314 votes and Mary DeSimone with 284 votes were also elected to three-year terms. The losing candidates were Joseph Izzo with 265, Henry Hay with 223, and incumbent Alan A. Kuser, 194, and Charles Benninger Jr. with 126. In Greenville, the school budget passed. The proposition to authorize the district to bond up to $1,193,760 for the purchase of eight new school buses passed 923 to 369, as well as the proposition to authorize the district to create a capital reserve fund passed 901 to 387. Increases in appropriations for the Greenville Public Library and Rensselaerville Library passed 956 to 330. Incumbent Board of Education members David Finch and S.J. Goodman were reelected to three-year terms with 800 votes and 778 votes, respectively. The losing candidates were Elaine Dykeman with 60 votes, Kevin Buki with 442 votes, Dr. Glenn Yellick with 38 votes, and James Bucci with 476 votes. Coxsackie, Athens, the budget passed, 615 to 290. Three-year Board of Education seats went to incumbents Nicole Caning with 524 votes, and Michael Donahue with 490 votes, and newcomer Shelley West with 385 votes. The losing candidates were J.D. Fielding with 224 votes, incumbent Maureen Hance with 370 votes, Edward Greenaway with 63 votes, John Greenaway with 26 votes, Samuel Anderson with 138 votes, Tiffany Russo with 169 votes, and Jessica Vermillier with 227 votes. In Hunter Tannersville, the budget passed 169 to 29, as well as the proposition to for new school buses, 174 to 25, that passed. And another for a vehicle capital reserve fund passed 159 to 24. Helen Kerr was unopposed for an open seat on the Hunter Public Library Board of Trustees, and Andrea Benjamin Legg was unopposed for re-election to the Board of Education for a five-year term. Kerr got 176 votes. Benjamin Legg received 169 votes. In Wyndham, Ashland, Jewett, the school budget passed 330 to 119. A capital project proposition passed 303 to 146. Loni Coolmont-Holdridge was elected to a five-year term on the Board of Education over Tara Wyman, but the district did not report the number of votes. Burn Knox Westerloo voters approved a $24.69 million budget, 295 to 108. Ravina Queeman Selkirk budget was approved, 620 to 305. Gilboa Conesville's budget was approved, and Middleburg's budget was approved in nearby votes. In Columbia County, HudsonValley360.com reports that Germantown voters approved the $16.9 million budget 272-108. The Board of Education seat winners went to Lester Olson with 271 votes, Andrea Foley with 210 votes, and the loser was Lynn Polidoro with 203 votes. In Hudson, voters approved the $54.1 million budget 432-267. The five winners were Willette Jones with 413 votes for the Board of Education seats, Lakeia Walker with 409, Mark DePace with 404, Kirsten Gustafson with 384, and write-in candidate Calvin Lewis finished in the money, I guess you can say, with 251 votes. There were other write-in candidates, and their numbers are not reported here. New Lebanon Central School District budget was approved. They don't give the numbers, but they give the percentages, 75% to 25%. Proposition number one was approved 80% to 20%. And the winners on the Board of Education, again, they do not release their vote totals, John Kellis, Charlene Kane, and Robert Long. They also don't say who lost. Taconic Hills Central School District, the budget was approved 396-202. Proposition number two passed 445-152, and proposition number three passed 411-188. The Board of Education seats went to Molly Delaney with 466 votes, Kevin Masonbacher with 302 votes, Alicia O'Rourke with 288 votes, and Diane Burfiend with 281 votes. The losers were Ronald Morales with 269 votes and Brenda Halstead with 227 votes. In Chatham, voters approved the $33.6 million budget, 338-153. Proposition number one passed 354-136. The Board of Education seats went to Muriel Faxon with 366 votes, Fred Hutchinson with 333 votes, Beth Hover with 322, and Marianne Piero with 288 votes. Ichabod Crane's $46.7 million budget was approved with 1,155 votes for, 597 against. Proposition number one passed with 1,182 for, 560 against. And that was proposition number one. Proposition number two was 1,416 yes and 330 no. The Board of Education seats in Ichabod Crane went to Matthew Nelson with 935 votes, Elizabeth Phillips with 899 votes, and Megan Lafferty Brown with 698 votes. Finishing out of the winning seats were Bill Schneider with 611 votes, Thomas Driscoll with 581, Pat Schuler with 564, and Jim Antalek with 377 votes. Those were the results of the school board and budget elections Tuesday, May 17th.
I'm Tom Rowe at the Wave Farm, and let's hear a voice station from Milaik Silan, a fixed media radio piece composed solely of recorded human voices. It evokes the casual act of radio dialing by presenting a wide range of vocal gestures and textures that loosely resemble sounds associated with radio broadcasting. Each station catalogs distinct timbres of disembodied radio voices, transformed and extended beyond syntax. The piece is the first work of the radio art portfolio of the same name, Voice Station, produced as part of the doctoral research conducted by Milaik Silan at the University of Calgary.
What's interesting is when you feel a sense of almost exchange, that the person speaking through the radio is giving you space to form your own thoughts and your own questions.
I think the radio is something that I haven't appreciated as much as I am than I should.
I use the radio to tell what time it is.
I love listening to lectures.
It's a great way to hear new people and new music and really get to know the radio hosts.
The person speaking through the radio is giving you space to form your own thoughts and your own questions.
To feel a sense of almost exchange, that the person speaking through the radio
is giving you through the radio is giving you space to feel a sense of almost exchange. That the person speaking through the radio is giving you space in which to decompress and be introverted.
That the person speaking through the radio is giving you space in which to decompress
is giving you space to feel like
be introverted.
They're simply making an offering to you.
But you almost feel like you're in the hall listening along with them.
For me, that's a voice
from my mouth. So there is no...
pretty good. Resonant,
English,
expressive,
kind of a mass,
natural,
not the worst.
Not just trying to broadcast.
Available as a podcast. The phone is
sitting back. Human voice. Laughter here and there.
The volume's okay. The volume's
laughter.
Other conditions on the cross, among the polygamous principles, among all the conditions. Thank you.